Good afternoon, St. Louis. DGS on KMOX. Happy Friday to you. A few minutes past 1 p.m. So not much to do with the news on Princess K, right? It's wish her the best.
And, yeah.
You know, it explains a lot. I just saw this morning where the Archbishop of Canterbury weighed in on all of the conspiracy theories and said you're engaging in village gossip and you're all going to feel real dumb. And so...
So I mean, it was getting pretty ridiculous there for a while.
Yeah, we got a little over our skis.
So the Archbishop from Canterbury thought we were telling tales?
He did.
Yeah.
Oh, good one.
Yeah.
I see what you did. I see what you did.
Well, that's my Amy joke for the day.
Yeah. I'm proud of you.
Yeah.
It's literary?
No, it right? was literary.
It's like making a Hawthorne pun.
It is.
I like it.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Rach is back. How you feeling?
Much better today. Thank you.
Yeah. She's been affected in a strange way. She evidently thinks that having the mask on means that we can't hear what she's saying.
No, I don't think that.
She was talking in such a way with Andrew and I in here that we thought maybe she thought she was invisible for a moment. So.
I think maybe she thinks she can say it and we can hear it. It's just that none of us know who's talking.
That's right.
No way of proving it was me.
Yeah.
It is kind of weird.
Was that Kevin?
Let's go.
Yeah, just make fart noises and be like, what? So you're feeling a little sheepish.
Yeah, I just feel a little weird in my mask, you know.
Isn't
because
weird,
no one else is wearing a mask. So
the
it's
change
like...
of the standards, right? I mean, it's not been that long ago that everyone had one. And certainly what a weird time, but I mean, doy, right?
I also forgot how it kind of impedes your vision just a little bit.
Just a little? Like when your glasses
strange.
Fog up?
Yeah.
Well, and I wore a KN95, like the kind we were wearing for a long time, especially when flying. And I wore one of those recently. And it's just like the pinching on your nose and covering your face. And I forgot how hard it is to breathe. I mean, it's fine. You adjust and you wear it. It's just a little bit shocking because we were so used to it for a while.
Yeah. Yeah. During a lot of COVID, Nick was working at Total Wine doing 12-hour shifts, and they were all curbside. So it was 12 hours of carrying cases of booze out to people's cars wearing a mask indoors, outdoors, just like, oh, man, he'd come home just beat every night.
Was that the best time for booze companies since Prohibition?
Hell yeah.
It was great.
I remember I would go on like a walk or a run because that's all I did. I mean, I was so isolated, and I would walk in the evenings, and there would be bins full of bottles and cans of beer and wine bottles like I've never seen before outside just regular homes.
And I think they were, if I remember correctly, they were designated as a, what do we call it?
Essential
yeah, business. Because they sold water. For real.
Well,
that was it.
Like, I mean, they were essential to a lot of people's mental health.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I doubt they sold a lot of water.
Well, I mean, there's water in there.
Some of it.
Can't keep it on the shelves.
Honestly, it's probably mostly water when you think about it.
Beer is,
Nick said that working there was one of the single greatest educations in his life just about humanity. And, you know, especially during COVID and how people treated you. And you saw the best, you saw the worst. You know, people would just be so thankful and give them a big tip. Then other people just be so rude. And I don't know.
Yeah.
I guess it did that to all of us, didn't it?
Well, I mean, some of us learned that work at waiting tables well before that. If you work in the service industries, you're going to find out real quick that some people are amazing and some people are the opposite of amazing.
And like selling shoes, right? I worked at a running store, but we would sit on the floor and change people's shoes and socks. So it was like very service-oriented.
Did you ever tickle their feet? Right. Did you ever go, ah?
No, but I would stick my hand in like a sweaty shoe from like, oh, no. So gross. But anyway.
She'd put her fingers in between your toes.
Yeah.
It was well, I mean, like throwing up.
You got to clean that out.
Stop. But I will say this. I was working there when I would.
It made me feel weird. All of it.
And then I high-fived Dave.
Yeah. The whole thing.
It wasn't even your joke.
The fingers
well, no, he started
toes.
It. He started it. Yeah,
that's true.
He rolled the ball down.
He was the leadoff man. Yeah. Hit a triple. I just hit a ground ball.
Yep.
But no, anyway,
scored the run.
What I was gonna say about people. So I had also like written a book. So I was doing book signings, but I was still working at the store. And sometimes the same people that would come to the book signing we were like, oh, it would be really nice. But then come to the store, not knowing
you'd
that
take
was
their socks
me.
Off.
And then they would be like, they'd snap, like, hey, yeah. hey, and just be super rude. And you could see the yeah. same person yeah. in two different
That's
lights.
Wild. If you snap your fingers at another person, they should get to smack you.
Oh, yeah. Agreed.
For sure.
Don't ever do that.
Oh, my gosh. We had this guy walk in, like this middle-aged man walk in, and he just went, he just like snapped, like an irritated. I don't know what he was mad at. Oh,
you know
my
what
gosh.
What I miss of getting new shoes as a kid was the measurer.
You know, oh, yeah, the metal thing for your feet. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I loved that
and
thing.
And then there was, like, the mat on the floor for kids that would show all the sizes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Up
yeah.
Yes.
That one was fun, too.
I don't remember that one. So maybe we've had this conversation before, but I feel like I'm still not clear on how much you're supposed to tip for carryout. Because during the pandemic, it was 20%.
Everybody you tip did like more. Right, right.
You tip like you're, because they're servers and yeah. they're not getting to serve you. Are we back to 10? Where are we? 15? What are we doing?
Yeah, that's a tough one.
I've always been around 20
yeah.
for the carryout. And here's why. Because someone put it together. And it's probably harder to put an order together to go than it is to just walk out and put a plate on a table. And so I just sort of trust that the right person's going to get it. That makes sense?
Yeah, that's the hard part because you don't know
like,
exactly.
If you hand me my food, you don't yeah. deserve 20%. But whoever put the whole thing together and boxed it correctly right. and didn't spit in it, like, yeah.
Yeah, for the carryout, mine is about, a lot of it is about the size of the order and whether or not it's complicated. Right,
like man,
if it's
look at you.
Well, no, I mean, I think there's a sliding scale because some things are less work, other things are more work, and if it's more work, I tip more.
Do you tip? And this is why I feel like Starbucks employees get ripped off because when I go to like Caldi's, I don't use an app. They have the little screen that they flip around.
Yeah,
and so mm-hmm. I always just tip 20% because baristas work really hard.
Yeah,
but on Starbucks, I order for the app. Through the app, and I don't know if there is a tip. I know there's got to be a tipping button, but it's not that prominent. It's not as prominent. So I just hit, like, place order. I don't search for the tip.
I think you have a certain amount of time to go back and do it after the order. Okay.
But it's not as prominent as, like, Caldi's,
right?
It has the screen. Do you want to tip this or that? And I always tip 20 because baristas are working hard making all the drinks.
Yeah,
and also, like, you know, 20% of that amount of money is not a lot of money, right? I could give them, I could figure out the math and go, here's $1.40, or I can just give them $2.
Yeah.
Any news on Ohtani?
No news, just, you know, just more questions
any
being asked about
gossip?
The story. There's a really good piece in The Athletic from Ken Rosenthal and Evan Drellick. Oh, no, I'm sorry, Andy McCullough, two of their big national baseball guys. Just, like, going through the questions that need to be asked, like, how seriously does Major League Baseball need to investigate it? I think everybody agrees pretty significantly. Like, you got to know the details here. But I didn't realize when we talked about it yesterday, and I read it in that story, that even giving the money to the bookie is a federal law, is a federal offense. You mm-hmm. cannot give money. You cannot wire money to an illegal bookmaker. It is a federal offense. Mm. So that's partly why you would say that's why the story changed so fast.
Yeah.
Right? Because that would mean, now it sounds to me like, remember the laws we've talked about where they're not really laws they seek out and prosecute, but they're tack on laws to get you to cooperate. Mm. Like, if you don't cooperate, we're going to add this, this, and this, and this to the enhancers to it. It sounds like it's kind of used that way because mostly the federal government wants to get the bookmakers. They don't care about the people betting. Similar to how, you know, they're not as worried about the Johns. They're more worried about stopping the prostitution ring. And
no one's ever said the Johns.
I know. I was like, what?
Mike Wheeler just did. And yeah. I knew he was going to say it. Like, I'm not saying I'm smart.
I've watched too many Law and Order,
like,
episodes.
A sentence ahead of when people are talking.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm like, he's going to say the Johns.
Yeah.
And I was like bracing for it.
Yeah, that was in the John.
You didn't disappoint.
In Jack's voice from Law and Order. So that all we have now is just the questions that go along with how does the league handle it? And they obviously have to take it seriously, even if they end up finding
the
nothing.
The whole deal, though, like, it's always the cover up.
Well, yeah.
And that's what I'm worried about. I'm not worried, but I mean, that's what I'm, you know, if I have any concerns about Choi.
The concerns of people covering baseball are that they're going to take any way out of looking deep into Shohei that they can because he's such a big deal.
Sure.
Because he just signed, you know, a $700 million contract, and he's the biggest star in the world. I mean, that's it. And in baseball, he's the biggest star in the world.
I heard you talking to our boss earlier about it, and you were kind of, you know, talking about whether ignorance of the law, like, you know, he's not from here, he's not American, he doesn't speak the language. The guy whose job it is to help him with the language is the one committing the crime.
Right.
And like, he has some pretty good plausible deniability.
Yeah, the interpreter said that he didn't know it was illegal to bet with a bookmaker in California. I don't know if that's true or not. That's what he said.
Yeah.
But it is conceivable to me that Ohtani wouldn't know that. I mean, our gambling laws in the U.S. are not uniform, as we well know. So if you're from another country and you don't live here in the off season and it's not something that you care that much about, why would you know?
Any thoughts on the tournament from anybody?
Oh,
there's lots of thoughts from yesterday.
Heaven.
Dude, that one of the worst
KU
calls
game?
Ever.
Yeah. Oh.
Dude, look, KU got bailed out.
As a KU dad, bro. That was a travesty.
And I heard Charles Barkley and those guys talking about it.
And Clark Kellogg.
Clark Kellogg.
Carrying the water for him.
Yeah, I mean, he makes a fair point that you can't do anything if the rules don't allow for it. But I think the real point is...
The rules should be allowable.
If you can't review that, you should not have review.
Yeah. Not only...
That's a game-changing, history-changing play.
Yeah, not only should Kansas have lost that game, but that's one of the best defensive plays I've ever seen.
It's phenomenal, yes.
In the tournament,
he didn't
history.
Even get a finger. He never, if you touch the hand, it's a penalty, it's a foul. Yeah. But he didn't touch anything but ball.
Here's what bothers me about officials. It's, especially in college, I think they're so bad at this. The anticipation, the assumption call. So when two guys are, a play like that, you've got the offensive player who's got the lead on the defensive player. He goes up to dunk or to lay up or whatever. The other guy tips the ball away. The offensive player falls. Your assumption is, well, he must have made contact.
Right.
Because he wouldn't have fallen otherwise. But he clearly didn't see there was contact.
That's right.
Because contact didn't happen.
Right. They're so, officiating what the result is not the action. Yeah.
What they think is going to happen
absolutely.
In the moment. Yeah.
You'll see that
he was
a lot.
Ready to blow the whistle.
You'll see that a lot in college and in the NBA, but I think it's more egregious in college.
Way more egregious.
Where, like, a small guy runs into a big guy, and the big guy's just standing there, but the small guy falls because he's the small guy, and they call the foul on the big guy, and the big guy is like, I didn't do anything. I stood here.
Yeah.
Versus if it's the other way around, the big guy running into the small guy. The small guy's going to go flying, and the big guy's going to get the penalty again. The foul again.
Which team is it that beat Kentucky?
It was Oakland University.
I like those guys.
Suburban Detroit.
Wearing their black pantyhose and such.
how about that? By the way, how about the story in that game? Like the guy that lit it up for
Gokey.
Them. This guy had not played Division I college basketball until this year. He was playing at Division II Hillsdale for the last 4 years. This is his fifth year of eligibility. He's got the extra COVID year. It's the only reason he has an extra year, because of the COVID year. And he goes out and makes 10 three-pointers.
Mm-hmm.
He averaged 12 points a game in the regular season. This guy wasn't like 25 points a game, their leading scorer. He was their sixth man. He was the sixth man of the year in their conference. And he does what only four other players had ever done in a tournament game before and makes 10 three-pointers.
And also, I thought the side story of Trey Townsend is one of the players.
Yeah, yeah.
His dad was a credentialed photographer on the baseline shooting the game.
Yep.
And his son is in front of him shooting critical free throws with like a few seconds left. And the guy's got the camera and he's like, do I watch? Do I shoot? What do I do
that's
here?
Great.
Can you imagine being in that
spot?
And
that's just a small school, like just outside of Detroit. Like it's not, that's nothing.
Was it Rochester, is that right?
Yeah, yeah, Oakland County, which is north.
Yeah.
So were there the typical amount of upsets?
It's because the other ones are borderline. Like a 8-9 is not an upset.
No.
10-7 is not really an upset. The first one you might get to, there were a couple 11s that won. Even that's not a big upset, but you had the huge one with Kentucky. You had the almost with KU.
Yeah.
And I think what was the other biggest upset? Was it Oregon, which is not really that big of a deal? It's a Pac-12 team that was a lower seed.
I was upset with Drake's loss. I'm a Missouri Valley Conference fan. That's the St. Louis Conference here. And they have a difficult time getting into the tournament because they have a difficult time scheduling good, tough opponents because schools like Michigan State or Kansas or whatever won't play them because there's no upside to them playing one
all
of these.
Risk, yeah.
It's all risk for them because if they lose, that's not good. But if they win, well, they were supposed to win anyway. So it's difficult for a Missouri Valley team to get in. And Drake had a great opportunity to win that game yesterday and just absolutely blew it. And so, for me, because my school never goes to the tournament, I have to live vicariously through the rest of them. But when a Missouri Valley school gets in, they have to take advantage of their opportunities. Yeah. And if they don't, I think it hurts down the road. It hurts for next year. So, I don't know. That part really bothered me. That was the most bothersome thing other than that blown call last night.
124 DGS. Tom Ackerman's going to join us at the bottom of the hour. Give us a Cardinals update. Talk about some March Madness stuff. You guys ever do this? So Rach and I are sitting in the office just, you know, the before time. Just, you know, it's almost showtime, but it's not quite showtime. Just sitting there. And I'm going through TikTok. And then I see this throwback ad for salmon cakes. It strikes me, oh my God, we had salmon cakes once a week, and I haven't thought of that in 50 years.
Like the out of the can?
Out of the can.
And every now and then there'd be that white bone?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yes. Yeah, yeah.
Oh my gosh. And you would bite into it and it would turn into powder?
What were you rich people doing? I don't know what you're talking about.
Well, canned salmon's pretty cheap. We used to have it all the time.
I've never heard of this.
It's really good with barbecue sauce.
I thought you were talking like salmon patties.
Yeah.
It looks like a crab cake, but it's for poor people. Yeah.
Oh, for poor people.
We ate it a lot.
Yeah, so do we.
But then the white bone, and it was just a
And that
shock.
Was the whole purpose of the ad. It said, can you feel what it felt like to bite into the bone? And I was yes. Yes, I can.
What?
Yes, I can.
It was such
They promoted that part?
Yes, they do.
I would say there's nothing like the juxtaposition of textures in a salmon cake and the bone.
Oh, yeah.
Like, there's nothing
it. You're going to have one great bite.
Yeah.
Couple of okay bites, and then you're going to bite the bone.
And it's just like soft chalk. Chalk that's been marinating.
Yes, yes.
I don't know.
And this was in a can.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Any
still is, by the way. You can go buy them at the grocery store now.
Take it out of the can, throw it with some breadcrumbs, throw it in a pan with some oil.
That's wild.
Yep.
There you go.
I feel like, and this...
Some egg.
This may
Hold
not
it all
be,
together.
Yeah, this may not be for everybody, but that same era also makes me think of cottage cheese.
Oh, yeah.
Which
I have never tasted and never will.
I don't think
I was
have
a kid
either.
And I hated it.
Just, I mean, look at it.
Yeah, it looks gross. It tastes gross, too.
I like it. It's high in protein.
It is high in protein.
I can't take you seriously in the mask.
There you go. That's quite a
Does it taste like sour cream?
No.
No. It tastes like cheese.
I would say the first bite is actually good, and then there's something like right before you're done with that first bite, you think, never again.
Why am I doing this?
What about hot prunes? Ever had your grandma?
Never had one.
My grandma would make hot prunes.
No.
And then we would eat them.
And then not stray too far from the house after
well,
that?
Well, she wouldn't let us eat too many. I didn't know why.
Okay.
Yeah.
She you get the scoots, right?
Yeah.
Did you guys ever have the Jell-O salad with mandarin oranges?
Oh. Never had that.
And marshmallows.
What was it about
walnuts?
The 70s and Jell-O? Jell-O molds.
I loved it, and I like Jell-O, and I like oranges, but that combo,
yeah.
No.
What about the stuff in the, is it the cranberry sauce in the can?
Yeah, not a fan.
I've never done that either.
With the lines? If you can't see the lines, it's not cranberry sauce.
Yeah. I'm like, give me the real thing.
The thing that Amy's talking about that I remember was called ambrosia.
Uh-huh. Yeah. It had like,
someone died.
Was it whipped cream that was that? Or was it?
It was everything.
It was more like shaving cream.
Yeah, it was weird.
It really was.
Like, was it Cool Whip probably?
No, I would have eaten the kid's finger with Cool Whip on it.
But there really was.
There's a million people telling us the recipe for ambrosia through their car speaker.
What's the difference between, and I never could understand, ambrosia with the Jell-O and like Watergate salad?
Oh, you got me on that. Yeah.
We're going to get a call.
I thought ambrosia was cheese.
Welcome back, guys. DGS on KMOX. Going to check in with Tommy Ackerman from down south. So, Tom, no game tonight, right?
Yeah, we just got canceled, Dave. It's been raining off and on. Right now, it's not raining, but there's still rain in the forecast, and they decided, let's just call this thing. It's a night game. 5:40 was the scheduled start, Central time. So they decided to bang the game, and they will be playing here tomorrow, their final game at Roger Dean, because they're starting to wrap things up here. Yeah. They'll be playing in West Palm on Sunday, and then it's off to Arizona.
You know what this means? Ackerman out on the town.
Yeah. It's going to be a Friday night for Tom Ackerman.
Look out.
Let's go.
Hide your ladies.
Tearing up Abacola.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah, nice. It's college basketball.
Oh, games tonight,
all day long.
Yeah, I know where I'll be. Where's the go-to
place now
for the college hoops?
You know, I was just thinking about that, actually. Where would be a great place to go? A very expensive place is the Woods. That's Tiger's place. So at the bar at the Woods, they have every game on, but you can rack up a bill there pretty quickly.
Just go show up at Michael Kelly's condo.
Oh, good call. Is he still here?
Somebody is.
Yeah, be his mom.
Tom, do you remember? do you remember the place where Kamish used to post up? Rick Hummel had a spot.
The Abbey Road.
He would always be there because he loved college basketball, and he would be nonstop watching the games when he wasn't at the ballpark. And then we would all just be like, "Let's go hang with Kamish."
That's cool.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he owned this town, so you know, he would walk into Abbey Road, they would just hand him the remote.
Yeah, they did, actually.
So, Tommy, any games you especially enjoyed or did not enjoy yesterday?
Well, I feel bad for my Kentucky friends. I do, actually, and you know, because that's a tough thing to deal with, but Oakland beating Kentucky was pretty great. I mean, those are the kind of games that you hope for in the NCAA tournament when you have these inexperienced teams. But the interesting thing about it is, you know, Kentucky is the inexperienced team, oddly enough. You know, they play an Oakland team. These guys are all 23, 24 years old. Kentucky's got a bunch of teenagers out there, amazing players. But they haven't dealt with that kind of situation before, and I think that does factor in this time of year. That's what's fascinating about it, is it's still a basketball game. You still have to play it, and that's what happened in that game. I think last night, same thing, although Kansas is an experienced team, Samford, a team that plays really, really well together, gave Kansas all it could handle, and KU might have gotten a favorable call or two at the end, and they end up winning that ball game. But, yeah, it's going to be fun to watch this. This is my favorite weekend. I love the Sweet 16, the Final Four, and all of that. But the first weekend's the best. It's the most amount of games, and you have these underdogs, these Cinderellas, pulling off upsets. It's great.
Tom, been looking forward to getting your take on the Ohtani situation.
Well, you know, there's so much unknown here. I mean, here's my first take is this is a very well-timed event for the Cardinals, because there's a lot of turmoil as they're getting ready to play the Dodgers on Thursday. Maybe they can catch them in what was going to be a circus anyway. And now you have all of this surrounding Ohtani. I mean, he was standing at his locker yesterday after the loss to the Padres, and there's a crowd of reporters and then two PR members of the Dodgers standing in front of his locker saying Shohei's not going to talk. And the reporters basically are saying, well, maybe we can ask him that. And they ask him, and he walked away, said something in Japanese, and there was a reporter there that said he told everyone, have a good night. So he's not talking. Everybody seems to be lawyering up here, and there's a lot of unknown about what is the illegal gambling operation, how did $4.5 million get wired by his interpreter, why was Shohei and his interpreter, who are friends, talking in the dugout, and then an hour or two later, he's fired. Why did it go from he was helping out his friend to it was a massive theft? Like, what is going on here? So there's just too many loose ends for this story to go away anytime soon.
All right, so let's spin that forward. You mentioned opening day, 6 days from now against the Dodgers in L.A. What pieces of business need to get wrapped up down there, Tom? I mean, we're still waiting. We know we have a good idea on Tommy Edman. He's out for a while. Looks like Sonny Gray's getting close, but certainly not for opening day. Do we have any news on Lars Nootbaar? And are there any other stories we should be tracking for the next 5-6 days?
Ollie Marmol's going to talk to us here in just a little bit, Kevin, and so I'll have a little more information, but not a lot happened with the team today, so I think it's status quo.
Okay.
I think where we are right now, Sonny Gray was supposed to throw against a minor league team. He was supposed to pitch in a minor league game this morning. It got canceled because of rain. So unfortunately, I think that sets back even further any possibility of him pitching on the West Coast in that initial road trip, and they don't need to pitch him anyway. They need to make sure that he's ready in August, September, October. So my guess is that they start him on the injured list. John Mozeliak told me the headwinds were blowing that way anyway. They just hadn't made the determination. That doesn't mean that he's injured. It just means that there's no reason to push him right now when he hasn't pitched in a game in a long time. I mean, we're coming up on multiple weeks here. So that's one. Lars Nootbaar doesn't seem like he's going to be ready anytime soon either. Multiple fractures in his ribs. So that takes a lot of – he hasn't even taken swings yet. So that's going to be, I think, still a little bit of time. They haven't officially placed him on the IL. Tommy Edmonds a few weeks away. So Victor Scott, I mean, you know, the obvious is that he's super talented. He is a great defensive player. He has blazing speed. He actually can hit, too. He's a fun, exciting player. But they have to be able to play him every single day. And the only thing I think that's keeping them from doing that is Dylan Carlson actually looks great. I mean, Carlson's had a very good spring. He's probably your center fielder. Burleson can play in a corner and left. So can Brendan Donovan. And Jordan Walker's your right fielder. Not to mention that the Cardinals have a young man named Michael Ciani who could be a defensive replacement late in the game. He's a really good defensive outfielder, and he's your only other center fielder if you don't have Scott. So they have the luxury of starting Scott in the minors for a while if they wanted to. They could always go down and get him if they need him. I feel like if Edmund and Nootbaar come back, you're going to have to send Scott down anyway. So unless you absolutely think you must have Victor Scott starting in center field, I think you could have the option of sending him to Memphis initially. He hasn't even played Triple-A ball yet. I mean, he's only been a Double-A guy. So as good as he is, I understand that thinking. Selfishly, I'd love to see him, but I understand the thinking of keeping him down. And then, you know, the only other thing really is what do the Cardinals have in their bullpen? And with Keenan Middleton out, they do have a couple of decisions to make, but the bullpen looks pretty good to me. And then I just actually ran into Zach Thompson while getting a coffee and was chatting with him. He looked good yesterday, and if Gray starts on the IL, I think he will get that number five spot in the rotation.
So do they have enough that if Middleton's injury becomes a bigger thing, a longer thing, is there enough depth there that you think they'll be okay if it, you know, turns into a month or 2 months or whatever?
I think that Riley O'Brien is the bright spot. He's a pitcher that they acquired in the offseason who's still very young and kind of fits that swing-and-miss role that they wanted out of Middleton. I could see O'Brien pitching in the seventh or even the eighth inning. Gallegos and Helsley are really the marquee guys in this bullpen, and Romero from the left side. But O'Brien, I think, will emerge as one of those. He looks the part to me. He does not flinch. He's a very, very talented guy. And the ball just kind of bends left. It bends right. He's really hard to pick up. And I think that's a big thing for them is that they grabbed all of this depth, especially from the right side in the offseason, knowing that they might run into a problem. So I don't think they did that with the rotation like they should have. I think they have maybe not enough depth there, but they do have enough depth in the bullpen to get away with this for a while.
Tom, quick follow-up on the pen, because I've been reading some stuff. I think can't remember if it was Derek Gould or Lynn Worthy had a piece about Andre Pallante in the last couple of days, but apparently he's made some pretty significant changes to his pitch usage when he faces right-handers, because historically he's had the reverse split. He's had a lot of success against lefties, and righties have done damage, but apparently he's made some tweaks to fix that.
He has, and it's with his breaking ball. I actually asked Ollie about that yesterday. And, you know, his breaking ball, which used to have a really big break on it, he's kind of tightened it up and he changes the look of it. It can be a little harder to pick up for righties. And so he's getting more swing and miss out of it. He's gotten some strikeouts. So I think we always thought that Pallante was a ground ball guy, but he's getting good swing and miss. He has really had a good spring. I think Pallante, who's not a back end guy, he's a middle of the game reliever. But like you said, in situations, now you could depend on him a little bit more against righties, whereas, you know, he's one of those weird right-handed pitchers who lefties just can't pick up. The spin of his pitches, they have trouble with it. He also kind of hides the ball a little bit when you watch him. For a split second, the ball is like behind his back, and then it looks like it's flying out of his hip. And I think lefties have trouble picking that up, too. And he looks great. I mean, his fastball is harder than I remember. I mean, it's 95, 96 consistently, and then he throws the breaking pitch. I think he is on the right track. Pallante's having a good spring.
All right, Tommy, you enjoy your night off. Enjoy the basketball. We'll talk to you next week.
Guys, I appreciate it very much, and I will see you next week. Looking forward to getting home and seeing everybody.
So, like, if we're doing the Sweet 16 of unexpected pleasures, what Tom Ackerman's going through right now, where you think you're going to be working,
yeah,
and then something happens like a rain out or someone gets sick, or you're supposed to be going to dinner with the couple and they call and they say, yeah, oh, we just can't make it.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that the greatest?
Yeah, like a snow day.
Yeah.
When you're a kid.
An adult snow day.
Yep.
An unexpected time off.
People especially when it's timed well.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
today, oh, when you get to go out and watch college basketball and have
in
dinner.
In Florida.
On the company dime, no less.
Right?
How you great know, is that?
I want to make this
not
point,
not that I
too.
Ever experienced that.
Even when it's a job you love.
Yeah.
Right.
You can
yeah.
love your job, just sometimes it's great to not have to do it.
It's right. an unexpected, like...
Yeah.
Like Ron just hit his knee on the console.
Are you out
till
next week?
To take him to the hospital.
Yeah, yeah, we were thinking about...
Ron's just going on the aisle.
You're going to do best of for the rest
yeah.
of the show?
Yeah. Like, Steve, he's hurt real bad, man.
I got to take
gotta
him.
Go.
It got him right between the knee and the shin, okay? You picturing it?
Hey, is this what workman's comp is?
Are you limping?
Yeah, I don't feel right.
Man.
Uh-oh.
You look very unstable.
I know.
Rach was asking me, because she was off the show yesterday and didn't listen because she was feeling bad. She said, so Amy was literally making fun of Andrew's weight and his chair broke?
Yeah.
And I know what she was noodling for. Like, did you set that up? I'm like, no. Yeah. No, ma'am.
I wasn't making fun of his weight. I was simply asking questions about Dave's graphic description.
Just asking questions.
I'm just asking the questions.
Are you talking about the fat rolls?
It's funny because yeah. he rolled
rolls.
Right back into the studio right as you said that.
Yeah.
Right as you were talking about it.
Just
the timing
questions.
Is perfect.
Did you say he rolled back in the studio?
You know what?
He did.
I did. And I thought about it, hoping
sure
nobody would pick it up.
He meant it in a cool way, like he's rolling in.
I picked yeah. it up.
See him roll. Roll
his big ass in there.
They hate him. Poor guy.
I picked it up. Yeah, don't worry.
I didn't mean it like that.
I caught it.
I did not mean that.
There's a puppy here.
I took Andrew to get coffee
yeah,
today.
Yeah, we have a baby bulldog.
Yeah,
where? Who, you? You're like a baby bulldog?
What
just
is going
on?
Just because
of the rolls. Come on.
Oh, yeah.
This is what
happened
here. This is about time the chair breaks.
Yeah,
look out.
Yeah.
Was it this chair that I'm
it
sitting in?
It was that chair.
Yeah.
Okay. So upon further inspection, it was like one of the springs that broke on it.
Mm-hmm.
Was it the arm? Because this thing breaks
it wasn't
all the time.
The arm. It was like the back. Because I went like, it was very undignified. You'd think that I would have liked to have been able to handle it like, oh, something seems to have happened. But instead I went, whoa! And my hands went up and my legs went up. And I went, whoa, like that.
I'm going to have to go back and listen to that.
Kevin said I had big bulging eyes.
Yeah, it was like the cartoons where they go, ooh.
Because I thought I was falling like
yeah.
3 feet onto the ground.
So is it actually broken or just seemed like it?
Hard to tell. I thought it was broken at first, but the more I sat in it, the more maybe I just got used to it being broken.
Maybe it's a fun chair.
Yeah.
It's not the crazy straw.
Yeah, you never know what you're going to get.
I do love how everything around here is so broken that we're debating whether or not it's broken. It's like, it's not that broken.
I can't tell if it's broken.
Is it broke or just broke?
Is it unsalvageable?
Like, compared to the microphone stands? No, it's fine.
Yeah. Do we have a dictionary holding up the chair?
Best,
no.
Best chair in the place.
Yeah, we're running out of dictionary to hold stuff up.
It's a bunch of dictionaries.
Yeah, one of our coworkers
here.
Wants his dictionary back.
Yeah, use your phone.
Yeah, we need that for the studio.
I told him to open the dictionary and look up It Ain't Happening.
Does anybody really use a dictionary anymore? Like an actual book dictionary as opposed to like dictionary.com?
If you heard some of our callers, you'd say those people are still using physical dictionaries and probably looking for the phone book still.
Oh, man.
I meant like that Madonna as a song, a physical dictionary.
Does she feel that way sometimes?
I think she goes home and takes reps on this stuff.
Yeah.
She has Mason Jar throw out normal sentences that
which
she can come
back
to.
Which ones don't make the cut? That's what I want to know. We need a director's edit.
So anyway,
I want to see the scenes that don't make it.
So anyway, Andrew just hoved his way on back into the building from wherever. Whatever meal trough he was just at.
Came back in pulling a carriage.